So thank you very much for attending Srimad Bhagavatam class. So today we're going to be speaking from Canto 8, Chapter 5, and we've got quite a few verses that we'll be going through. Let's see. I believe we're starting with text 6, 7. Which one is on the board? Okay. So we're going to go all the way from 7 to 15. Right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So beginning with text 7, I'll just read them, and when we get to 15, then we'll do our traditional call and response. Text 7. Shastascha chakshusa putrascakshusho namavai manuhu puru purusha sudyumna pramukashchakshusatmajaha. Translation. The son of Chakshu, known as Chakshusha, was the sixth Manu. He had many sons headed by Puru, Purusha, and Sajumna. Text 8. Indro mantradumastatra deva apyadayoganaha munayastatra vairajan havismadvirakadayaha. Translation. During the reign of Chakshusha Manu, the king of heaven was known as Mantradrumna, and among the demigods were the Apyas, and among the great sages were Havishman and Viraka. Viraka. Text 9. Tatrapa deva sambhutyam vairajasya bhavatsutaha ajato nama bhagavan angshena jagatapatihi. Translation. In this sixth Manvantar millennium, Lord Vishnu, the master of the universe, appeared in his partial expansion. He was begotten in Vairaja, in the womb of his wife, Devasambhuti, and his name was Ajata. Text 10. Payodhim yena nirmatya sudanam sadhita sudha brahmano mbhasi dhritaha kurmarupena mandaraha. Translation. By churning the ocean of milk, Ajata produced nectar for the demigods in the form of a tortoise. He moved here and there, carrying on his back the great mountain known as Mandara. Text 11 to 12. Shri Rajo Vacha Yatha Bhagavata Brahman Matita Kshira Sagadaha Yad Artamba Yatashchadrim Dadharambucharatmana Yatamritam Surai Praptam Kim Chanyad Abhavatataha Etat Bhagavata Karma Vadasva Paramadbhutam. Translation. King Pariksit inquired, O great Brahmana Shukdev Goswami, why and how did Lord Vishnu churn the ocean of milk? For what reason did he stay in the water as a tortoise and hold up Mandara Mountain? How did the demigods obtain the nectar, and what other things were produced from the churning of the ocean? Kindly describe all these wonderful activities of the Lord. Text 13. Tvaya sankhatya manena mahimna sattvatam patehe nati tripyati mechittam suchiram tapatapitam. Translation. My heart, which is disturbed by the three miserable conditions of material life, is not yet sated with hearing you describe the glorious activities of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of the devotees. Text 14. Shri Suta Uvacha Sambrishto Bhagavan Evam Dvaipayana Suto Dvijaha Abhinandya Hared Vidyam Abhyachashtum Prachakrame. Translation. Shri Suta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas assembled here at Naimasharanya, when Shukdev Goswami, the son of Dvaipayana, was thus questioned by the king, he congratulated the king and then endeavor to describe further the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 15. Shri Shuka Uvacha Yada Yudhe Suraye Deva Yada Yudhe Suraye Deva Bhadyamana Shita Yudhaye Bhajamana Shita Yudhaye Gita Savo Nipatita Gita Savo Nipatita No Tishte Ransma Bhurishaha No Tishte Ransma Bhurishaha Prabhuji's. Shri Shuku Uvacha Yada Yudhe Shurai Deva Bhajyamana Shita Yudhai Gita Savoni Patita Notishte Ransma Bhurishaha Shri Shuku Uvacha Yada Yudhe Surai Deva Bhajyamana Shita Yudhaye Gita Savo Nipatita No Tishte Ransma Bhurishaha Matajis? Shri Shuku Vacha Yada Yudhe Sudaye Deva Bhajyamana Shita Yudhaye Gita Savo Nipatita No Tishte Ransma Bhurishaha Shri Shuku Vacha Yada Yudhe Shurai Deva Bhajyamana Shita Yudhaye Gita Savo Nipatita No Tishte Ransma Bhurishaha. Okay, we'll do the word meanings for text 15. And then I'll read the translation, or I'll read text 16, and then we'll do the translation together, the whole thing. So let's look at the word meaning. Sri Shuku Uvacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Yada, when, Yudhe, in the fighting, Asudayi, by the demons, Deva, the demigods, Bhajyamana, besieged, Shita Ayudhayi, by serpent weapons, Gata Savo, almost dead, Nipatitaha, some of them having fallen, Na, not, Utishteran, he got up again, Sma, so became, Bhurishaha, the majority of them. So I'll read 16 and then we'll read the translation. Yada duravasa shapena sendra lokastrayondripa nishrikascha bhavamstatra neshur ijjadaya kriyaha. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, when the asuras with their serpent weapons severely attacked the demigods in a fight, many of the demigods fell and lost their lives. Indeed, they could not be revived. At that time, O king, the demigods had been cursed by Durvasa Muni. The three worlds were poverty-stricken, and therefore ritualistic ceremonies could not be performed. The effects of this were very serious. Please repeat after me. Shukadev Goswami said, when the asuras, with their serpent weapons, severely attacked the demigods in a fight, many of the demigods fell and lost their lives. Indeed, they could not be revived. At that time, O king, the demigods had been cursed by Durvasa Muni. The three worlds were poverty-stricken, and therefore ritualistic ceremonies could not be performed. The effects of this were very serious. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is described that while Durvasa Muni was passing on the road, he saw Indra on the back of his elephant and was pleased to offer Indra a garland from his own neck. Indra, however, being too puffed up, took the garland and without respect for Durvasa Muni, he placed it on the trunk of his carrier elephant. The elephant, being an animal, could not understand the value of the garland, and thus the elephant threw the garland between his legs and smashed it. Seeing this insulting behavior, Durvasa Muni immediately cursed Indra to be poverty-stricken, bereft of all material opulence. Thus the demigods, afflicted on one side by the fighting demons and on the other by the curse of Durvasa Muni, lost all the material opulences in the three worlds. To be extremely opulent in materialistic advancement is sometimes very risky. The materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offenses to great personalities, such as devotees and great saints. This is the way of material opulence. As described by Shukdev Goswami, dana durma dandha, too much wealth makes one blind. This happens even to Indra in his heavenly kingdom, and what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons, otherwise he will fall down. Om Agyanti Midandha Sangranjana Shlakaya Chakshudun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamaiham Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shigudau Shiyutapatakamalam Shri Gudun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagnanaganatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Pratijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Kuruna Sandho Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Godangi Dadhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Site Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Dudubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we see a new pastime is beginning. The Shukdev Goswami is about to tell the tale of the churning of the milk ocean. Many wonderful things will be described throughout this canto. Lord Shiva drinking of the poison, the appearance of Mohini Murti. So many wonderful things come out of this churning of the ocean of milk. It's interesting to note that the majority of the Bhagavatam has been about the family of Svayambhuva Manu. It's gone on through canto 3 to 7. And so in this eighth canto, Shukadeva Goswami is sort of briefly moving through the various manvantars, the various periods of Manu. And in mentioning what incarnations, what manvantara incarnations appear there. And you'll see that Maharaj Parikshit will interrupt him and ask, can you please elaborate more on this particular avatar? The avatars are limitless. They come like the waves of the ocean. There's so many of them you can't even describe. And you'll see in the Bhagavatam many times they're just very briefly mentioned. But here, with this incarnation of Ajita, the Kurma incarnation, the turtle incarnation, Maharaj Parikshit is thirsting to hear more. He's describing, you know, he's asking Shukdev Goswami, please give me more nectar about Krishna. Tell me more about this incarnation. And so Shukdev Goswami begins this pastime in this verse we're reading here on the board, and he begins with a very important lesson. And you'll see that this lesson is reoccurring. It's always being told to us in Srimad Bhagavatam and all throughout the Vedic literature. And it's the warning of how to relate to wealth and the dangers of wealth for one who's trying to attain, you know, liberation and ultimately love of God. And so why is it repeated so often? Why do we hear it again and again and again? You'll see, like, multiple times Lord Indra is getting into trouble because of this, right? So why is it something that's so important? Well, we can understand that it's something always on the mind of the conditioned soul. In fact, if you find yourself sometimes meditating what it would be like to be wealthy, you know, yes, I'm sitting here, I'm a Hare Krishna, I'm chanting, but, you know, if I just had a few $1,000,000, you know, maybe somehow, I know myself, sometimes I fantasize like that, right? Like, you know, maybe I'm chanting japa, and I know I can't gamble or anything like that, but what if I found a lottery ticket on the ground, you know? And this lottery ticket was like $350 million, you know, Sri Sachi Nandana would, you know, then I'd come with a gold cane and, you know, a gold fringe dhoti or something. You know, immediately there's some fantasy how I would enjoy. And of course I'd be a devotee, but, you know, I would be a very opulent devotee, right? Mercifully giving money everywhere, right? So these fantasies are always there for the conditioned soul. We think that if we attain wealth, we'll be happy. We're going to be satisfied, right? All those disturbances, all the problems in our life, if we just get rich, they'll all vanish, right? And not only that, but all those desires that we have, we'll be able to fulfill them very easily, right? Life will be wonderful if we just become rich. So everybody thinks like this. This whole material world, everyone is doing this. That's why everyone's working so hard, you know, running here and there in their cars, just like going crazy, trying to fulfill that fantasy, right? Trying to make it into a reality. Is it just like if you go to the store here on the corner, you'll see the every time you go there, there's, you know, at least two or three people in line just getting lottery tickets, right? Just hoping against hope that they're going to somehow scratch it off and be a millionaire, right? This is like they realize that I can't do it through hard work. It's impossible. So, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to do it, the only way my life will be worth living is if somehow I get this winning lottery ticket. So this is the nature of the conditioned soul. And you'll see repeated again and again in the scriptures, there's a very important warning that actually wealth, unless you're on a very high level of consciousness, can be very disturbing to your Krishna consciousness. You'll see here Prabhupada is very powerful, actually. If you look in this particular purport that we read, Prabhupada's mentioning here that to be extremely opulent in this material advancement is sometimes very risky. The materially opulent person does not care about anyone, and thus he commits offenses to great personalities, just as devotees and great saints. So now notice Prabhupada says here, he does not care about anyone. So the tendency as your bank balance increases and increases and increases, for a materialistic person, there's this element of not caring about anyone. So if you think about this, well, what is this? What does it mean to not care about anyone? Well, as it says here, this is the way material opulence is described by Shukdev Goswami, dana durma dhanda. Too much wealth makes one blind. So durma dhanda. So in various places, Prabhupada translates, of course, dhanda, meaning blind. You become blind. And durmada means false prestige. And dana, of course, means wealth. So you become blinded by false prestige. As your, put it this way, it's almost like as your bank balance increases, you become blind. Your vision becomes darkened, right? And elsewhere, Prabhupada has translated it as intoxicated. And really, they're not much different. If you think about it, when someone becomes intoxicated, as they ingest that substance, they're sort of becoming blind. They're entering into darkness. They no longer see reality clearly, right? They lose their vision of how things actually are. And you'll see when people become intoxicated, sometimes they literally become blind, you know, they drink turpentine or something like that, and they literally become blind. But people definitely lose consciousness of what proper behavior is, improper behavior, how to relate to other people, what is their relationship in connection to others, right? You'll see sometimes, you know, late at night, you'll be awoken by a scream on Watsika Avenue. You know, people running down the street, screaming, drunk, right? You'll hear sometimes, you know, Naikatma Prabhu will be like, you know, get out of here, right? Because people, you know, you have these drunkards, right? And they come and they cause trouble. So and by day, this person might seem like a normal person. You know, he works in the stock exchange or something like that. At night, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, he's running with his T-shirt off and, you know, like full of, you know, dirt all over his back and stuff like that, right? Like, how does this happen to people? Because as you ingest this substance, it actually lowers your consciousness and it makes you blind, right? So we say alcohol, like in a drink, you know, it'll say like 30 proof, 40 proof, 90 proof. It's the alcohol inside it which intoxicates you, right? So what is it in wealth that intoxicates you? That's the point being presented here, is that wealth is a kind of intoxicant. And when you drink it, when you taste it, when you fill your bank account with it, it gets you drunk. And what is it that gets you drunk? It's not alcohol, it's false prestige. And this is something very powerful within the conditioned soul. It's at the root of our existence here. The very body is built upon the false ego. The illusion that we are the enjoyer and dominator of matter is the foundation of our whole existence here. And so when you drink false prestige, you become intoxicated at the very foundation of your being. It's very powerful. And you lose your perception of reality. It justifies, it tells you, yes, you are actually the Lord and Master. Yes, you are very powerful. Yes, you are very great. Yes, you can enjoy this world. You see? And so when you taste that illusion, you lose all respect for others. You're not able to clearly see people in the proper position in relationship to yourself. And in Vedic culture, just like, for example, you'll see with alcohol, you'll see that there's, you know, generally in modern society, you know, alcohol, people, they don't care. You know, people, the government doesn't care, you're allowed to drink it, right? But they warn you not to go too far, because you can get hurt, or you hurt yourself or others. And therefore, you'll see that constantly there's warning. I know growing up in high school and stuff like that, there's constantly warnings, you know, don't drink and drive, right? And I saw there's recently some commercials that came out that they keep making, I guess it doesn't work, the propaganda doesn't work, so they make commercials more and more intense to try to capture people's attention. And so they have these commercials about, like, don't drink and drive, and they're absolutely brutal. Like, they show, like, slow motion. You know, there's some teenagers driving in a car, and they appear to be all happy. And then at a certain point, you know, like, the enjoyment is destroyed, right? You'll see the car will skid out of control, and they show, like, in slow motion, you know, the windshield smashing into people's faces, and, you know, their bodies being crushed by car tires. You know, the most brutal thing you can imagine. And so it's supposed to snap people out of it, like, don't do this. Wake up. Be careful, right? So in one sense, the Srimad Bhagavatam is doing the very same thing to us. Using this example is telling us, don't drink and drive, right? Don't become intoxicated. Keep yourself sober. And be very careful about this liquor known as wealth, because you can't handle it, right? You may think you can handle it, but it's going to actually distract you and disturb you from the goal of life, which is to go back to Godhead. And the most dangerous thing... Just like with alcohol, the most dangerous thing perhaps is to drive. The most dangerous thing is to become intoxicated with wealth and then try to interact with Vaishnavas and saintly people, Brahmanas, advanced spiritually personality, because their association is like fire. Right? You have to be very, very careful when you're associating with advanced spiritual personalities, because one wrong move, one offense that you make to them, you can destroy your material and spiritual life. And as we see with these, the example being given here of Indra, it can be very, very severe. Not only does it affect you, it affects everyone that's connected to you. Right? We see not only is Indra being destroyed here, but all of the demigods are also afflicted. And the demons, seeing their weakness, then take advantage of that and attack and try to destroy them and take everything. So you'll see that this principle, as Prabhupada mentions here, this happens even to Indra in his heavenly kingdom, and what to speak of others in this material world. When one is materially opulent, he should learn to be sober and well-behaved towards Vaishnavas and saintly persons, otherwise he will fall down. So really, one has to become very, very sober. When one is around highly advanced personalities, like, for example, in Srila Prabhupada's here, I'm sure that his disciples were very sober in his association. You didn't joke around, you didn't play around, you didn't behave like a fool, right? You had to be very, very careful about what you said and what you did. And even, I know, you know, the devotees would make sure that they're even thinking the right thoughts, right? I know Sura Prabhu tells one story about that. So guarding Prabhupada's door. So, you know, devotees are even conscious of having the right thoughts around Prabhupada. So that's called being sober. Yeah? And when you're intoxicated by wealth, when you're sort of puffed up by false prestige and feeling the effects of that and having your vision darkened by that, it's very hard to remain in a sober condition. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Now, of course, one can have wealth in Krishna service. Prabhupada would oftentimes, especially he's preaching in India, he would mention how many temples he has and how many lakhs of rupees are coming in. But Prabhupada's not disturbed by that. Because Prabhupada, for when Prabhupada utilizes wealth, when great advanced devotees utilize wealth, they don't taste any false prestige. You see, it's almost like alcohol-free, right? The alcohol has been burned out of it. The intoxicant of false prestige has been burned out of the wealth. But, and so the pure devotee doesn't feel any intoxicating effect because he's not using it for himself. He's using it fully in Krishna's service, right? When an advanced devotee utilizes money, he doesn't even think of how I'm going to utilize it for my own prestige and power. He just thinks, how can I serve Krishna? How can I please Krishna? How can I make Krishna happy? Right? How can I use this to increase Krishna's pleasure? So, for most of us, we're not on that platform, right? And therefore, Krishna keeps us pretty poor. For most of us, if we weren't devotees or whatever, we probably wouldn't be living in such a simple condition, right? It's very, sometimes it can be very uncomfortable to live as a devotee because Krishna keeps you in a poor condition for your own protection. He doesn't allow you to become very wealthy or opulent because it can disturb your service. So for devotees, these warnings are very, very nice because they constantly remind us that this condition we're in, although it may be uncomfortable at times, there may be some difficulties that are there because of it, it's actually for our own good. Right? And we have to keep that in mind. We have to always remember that because the tendency is we forget very easily. In Kali Yuga, and we become anxious, you know, I need to acquire wealth, I need to acquire money. But we have to keep in mind that this condition of being of living very simply, this is actually Krishna's mercy upon us. To keep us situated in a condition where we can go back to Godhead. In other words, the purpose of living like this, the purpose of living simply, is that we should keep in the forefront of our mind the goal that we're working towards, which is to attain love of Krishna and to attain, you know, the spiritual world and leave this material world behind. So it's important to keep that in front of us and keep that, keep an understanding of where we're going, right? And not become distracted into other paths. Now, this is also mentioned actually, and by Rukmini Devi and Krishna, when in the Krishna book, when Rukmini Devi and Krishna are discussing with each other, Krishna tells Rukmini that, you know, my devotees are generally very poor, right? And nobody, no rich men, they're not interested in worshiping me, right? And Rukmini Devi responds to him. I'd like to read what she says. My dear Lord, you have also stated that the richest section of human society does not worship you. This is also correct because persons who are puffed up with material possessions think of utilizing their property for sense gratification. When a poverty-stricken man becomes rich, he makes a program for sense gratification due to his ignorance of how to utilize his hard-earned money. So the tendency is when someone is, you know, doesn't have much money, when they get money, immediately they start making plans for sense gratification. And this is for devotees too, right? The tendency is when devotees, sometimes, are not very advanced, when we get a lot of money, then immediately we begin thinking how I'm going to enjoy. I'm going to get this, I'm going to do this. You know, I'll be a devotee, I'll chant Hare Krishna, but, you know, I'm going to enjoy this material world, right, in a pious way. So, this, you know, I want to be like, you know, one of these demigods flying around in his personal city, you know, chant Hare Krishna and tour the world, you know, enjoying sense gratification. So this particular consciousness, as Rukmini Devi says here, under the spell of the external energy, he thinks that his money is properly employed in sense gratification, and thus he neglects to render you transcendental service. So really that money is meant for the service of Krishna. It's meant to give Krishna happiness, but when you actually get it, unless you're in pure consciousness, the tendency is to forget that. right? To forget that this is for Krishna's service. You have to be very strong to remember that, because it's intoxicating. My dear Lord, you have stated that persons who possess nothing are very dear to you. Renouncing everything, your devotee wants to possess you only. So this is the point, is that the devotee leaves aside material wealth in order to attain the real wealth that is Krishna. Right? Krishna is actually wealth. In fact, the goddess of fortune waits upon Krishna and fans him with a chamara fan. Right? So, something Krishna is even beyond wealth. Wealth is simply what's decorating Krishna. And so the devotees are sacrificing everything to attain that wealth, to attain him. Right? So the devotees want to possess you only. I see, therefore, that a great sage like Narada Muni, who does not possess any material property, is still very dear to you, and such a person does not care for anything but your lordship. Also, Prabhupada mentions here in relationship, Dana Durman Dandha, it actually comes from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, second chapter, text 5. And so in that whole area, Shukdev Goswami, as Prabhupada mentions here, Shukdev Goswami is giving this advice. So in that section, Shukdev Goswami is advising how a devotee needs to live very simply and not to be attracted to material wealth. Right? I wanted to read from Prabhupada's purport to 224, and Prabhupada really powerfully sums it up here, this instruction. So please listen carefully. So-called comforts of life are not actually helpful for progressive civilization. Rather, they are detrimental to progressive life. So we want to live comfortably. That's why we want money, right? But this is actually not helpful for us. In the system of Sanatan Dharma, or four divisions of social life and four orders of progressive realization, there are ample opportunities and sufficient directions for a happy termination of the progressive life, and the sincere followers are advised therein to accept a voluntary life of renunciation in order to achieve the desired goal of life. So, meaning that we're advised by the acharyas to accept voluntarily a life of renunciation, meaning that we may have many, many desires that are there. And it may be difficult when we don't have much money. We may be in anxiety that all these desires are there and I can't fulfill them. Right? This is terrible. But actually, this is called tapas, or austerity. And so this is necessary. One must voluntarily accept this kind of lifestyle in order to make progress towards the absolute truth. You can't do it otherwise. You have to willingly live a lifestyle of austerity, willingly let go of these various desires, and be willing to live simply. So it's as if one is not accustomed to abiding by the life of renunciation and self-abnegation from the beginning, one should try to get into the habit at a later stage of life, as recommended by Srila Shukdev Goswami, and that will help one to achieve the desired success. So even if it's, for example, born in America, something like that, we're not used to living in an austere situation. But nevertheless, we have to willingly accept it. From whatever stage we understand the importance of it, it's something that must be done, right? And Prabhupada actually mentions this verse, Dana Dormandanda, in relationship to America. He mentions that essentially America is a place where people are blind. He uses in the example of the blind man and the lame man, that they combine the two, the culture of India and the wealth of America. So our culture in America is inherently blind. We're sort of, you see this whole culture of sense gratification where there's no understanding of the absolute truth, no interest in attaining transcendence even, right? It's just absorption in television and food and, internet and all these different things. This whole thing, this is actually a blindness arising from the intoxication of wealth. So therefore, we have to understand and inject this culture of Krishna consciousness into American society to make it actually, as Prabhupada actually mentioned, make it like Vaikuntha. Okay, so it's 8:15. We're out of time. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes, Archita Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
It may seem a little bit strange that the demigods, due to a momentary blindness of self-pride, are now being overrun by the demons who are always in that state.
Right.
Their state is always self-pride and arrogance and trying to enjoy the material world. So it seems a little strange that, you know, as a devotee or a demigod, you make a mistake, and all of a sudden you get overrun by the other party who's always in that state that you made the mistake temporarily. You know, it seems a little strange.
Yes, it is strange. Anything else? So why? Well, you know, it's basically the demons, they also have their Brahmins, right? Like Shukracharya, and they will worship him and become powerful through that. So that principle of honoring your elders and honoring sort of more advanced spiritual personalities, that's powerful even for the demons. So whenever you see them powerful, it's because of that. And you'll see the demons and demigods, this is, you know, just like you have modern-day spies. You know, you look and find out when your opposing country, where its weaknesses are and things like that. They're always watching who has made an offense, right? Did Indra make an offense? So they go back and forth like this. The difference is that when the demigods, when they make an offense, they're very sorry for it. You'll see that Indra, you know, when he offends Brihaspati, right? He's sitting on his asan, and the demigods are doing puja to him and worshiping him. And Brihaspati comes in, and, you know, he kind of pretends not to see him, right? And Prabhupada mentions it because he's familiar with Brihaspati. You know, it's the danger of getting too close to your guru. He's kind of thinking of him as an ordinary man. So he figures, you know, I'm being worshipped. They're glorifying me. This is really nice. I'm just going to pretend he's not here, you know. Right? And so that's a big offense. And Brihaspati could have cursed him, but he didn't. He just left. But then immediately when Indra saw him go out of the room, he began lamenting, you know. And before everybody, right? Indra's actually a very great personality. Before everybody, he, you know, stopped the puja. And he explained, you know, I've made this great offense. I'm such a fool. Right? And right before everybody, he humbly admitted that, you know, he's offended Brihaspati. And he went out and he began chasing and looking for him. Of course, Brihaspati hid, right, to try to teach him, not to try, but to teach him a lesson. And so we see that Indra, as soon as he realizes, oh my gosh, I've done it again, he's a devotee, you know, but he's intoxicated sometimes by wealth and the power that's there, the opulence. Can't even imagine his opulence. But immediately he becomes sorry. You know, and immediately he begs forgiveness. You see, he tried to destroy Krishna and Vrindavan with the Samvartika clouds. But as soon as and Prabhupada also mentions in that regard that Indra was thinking that he's as powerful as Krishna. Momentarily, he was thinking, this is a devotee who's momentarily thinking, you know, I am, you know, as powerful as God, right? But then once he realized that he made a mistake, he immediately came to Krishna and paid obeisances and was begging forgiveness. There's an entire chapter in Krishna book of just his prayers of forgiveness. So that's the difference, is that the devotees are actually on a platform where they truly understand the position. It's just they're momentarily, there's a lapse of reason. Where yes, the demons are fully intoxicated, and they in that condition, they utilize the principles of Vedic culture to attain power. So it's a completely different platform. It's not based on knowledge. Yeah. Svas Prabhu?
Yeah, I think on this particular pastime also that Durvasa Muni, he cursed Indra and the demigods to be bereft of all opulence and power.
Yeah.
So that particular curse came to fruition. And then, of course, as you're just mentioning, because of the puffed-up nature of Indra, so the leadership and the curse created havoc for the demigods, and that's how they experienced all these difficulties.
Sure, sure. He's the king, you know? And so when he makes an offense, everybody has to suffer. So, you know, but simultaneously, when you'll see that, you know, ultimately he does come to his senses, you know, just takes some work, takes these experiences. So the Bhagavatam is constantly offering us these, we can learn from hearing about him rather than experiencing it ourselves, right? Yes, Prabhu?
Also, in this particular notion of Lakshmi, money, we see that Prabhupada, he gives us a remedy a recommendation in terms of Lakshmi, and that would be that if one is very wealthy, one should be very intelligent who he gives the Lakshmi to. In other words, you could give it to a person who's standing in the street begging. If you give that Lakshmi to that particular beggar, there's a certain reward that you get for that. But if you take that same Lakshmi and give it to a pure devotee of the Lord or in the service of the Lord, then that particular reward that you get is millions of times greater. So in other words, we should be, those of us that have Lakshmi, we should be very conscientious that who to give it to. Because sometimes we see people like Gates, for instance. You know, he's going to go and give money to some particular school to make better computers. You know, he'll give like, you know, $50 million of his Lakshmi to create a computer school to advance so-called human society. But that particular money, that donation, is practically useless. Whereas if he was to give that money, that Lakshmi, in the service of the Lord, it would enhance his reputation, it would enhance the preaching of you know, Krishna consciousness, of worship of the Lord. So another aspect of Lakshmi is you have to do something with it. You have to put it somewhere.
Right.
And people have the tendency to make Lakshmi, as you just mentioned, which is very true. People like to make money, but they don't really know what to do with it after they get it. So Krishna consciousness, we can teach people what to do with your money. This is what you should do, because if you give this money, like for instance, if you build a temple for Krishna, there's some particular remedy or equation to that. You know, one who builds the temple of the Supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu, then he'll go back to Godhead or the heavenly planets or some situation like that. So in Krishna consciousness, we should train people how to spend their money. And if we walk up to someone and they say, I have $1 million, can I give you? You said, yes, I'll take it. I'll take 4 million. I take 50 million. If you give me 100 million, yes, I'll take it. But we don't take a farthing for ourselves. We give everything to Krishna.
Mayapur is listening to the class and he's in ecstasy. Okay, thank you very much, Prabhu. All right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.